Good morning and welcome back to the Explicit Measures Podcast with Tommy, Seth, and Mike. Hello, everyone, and welcome back.
Good morning, gentlemen. Happy Tuesday.
Here we go. Everyone knows, you would never know what episode you are in or what day of the week it was unless Seth did his thing. So,
I mean, good. You know the day of the week.
It goes by quickly these days.
It does. Especially
let's do
if
some
you gauge your week. Go ahead. On the Explicit Measures Podcast episodes.
I'm sure most people do. It's like their clockwork now. Like, right?
For sure.
Yeah, I'm 1/5 the way done my week now. So starting off strong on a Tuesday.
Yes. You know, so we obviously have to record. We do have meetings and work and family. I miss you guys so much when it's a week off. It feels too long.
Tommy goes through like withdrawal for that week.
Yeah. I had to teach someone Power BI last week.
Oh yes, we saw videos this week.
Yeah,
Tommy has been in his family, kind of doing some lessons here.
Do we want to save this or
let me give you the main topic here today, and then we'll jump into some news and some fun things. All right, so welcome everyone. Today's main topic is going to be around fabric deployment patterns or models around how you deploy things potentially through dev test prod, or how do you deploy artifacts across different environments for testing things. That's kind of the open discussion here. I've got some ideas around some of that one. I think I've involved and experienced a little bit of this, but how will this work inside Fabric and what can we do? All right, Tommy, that's our main topic. Who are you teaching Power BI to that you're so excited about?
So my wife has been getting more involved with the business. I think you realize really, really quickly in very, very not necessarily unsure ways about your strengths and weaknesses when you're a full-time consultant, and especially when you run your own thing. And with all things getting busier, I know the things that I could work on. I know the things I'm strong in. But it's like, hey, I asked her one day, I'm like, would you just help me write a blog or just edit it just to look over it for my own sanity? She's like, yeah. Anyways, so she's getting more involved and she's going to do some more stuff. But I'm like, you know, it would probably help if you don't need to be an expert in it, but know the basic tenets like a dimension or a fact table. And then we started talking more. Thursday, I actually did a dash one a day with the clients. I'm like, I'll be fresh. So I'm like, let's do it. Well, you can do it. And she was game. We did the full dash one a day. We did them about 6 hours because obviously one person.
Because obviously an expert teaching it.
I'm going to reference here. This is someone who, one, hates data and numbers. Two, has just started using a computer in the last few months on a regular basis in the last 6 years because she's been home. So she's been out of the game for so long. It's like, now we're going to learn Power BI.
Awesome.
And as I sent you guys, dude, and it was pretty fun. It got me angry because she was catching on to things. And, when you do some training, when you have the stragglers, I'm like, if she can get this, she actually loved Power Query, loved cleaning data, that thought was amazing. DAX, it wasn't necessarily the functions, but just like, why is it doing this?
Welcome to everyone's first experience with Power BI. This is like things.
Yeah. So I'm actually pretty excited.
Well, as you know, Tommy, I'm here for the community. And that means all types of workers. So I'm offering my services to your wife so she can give me a call and I will give her some advice on how to negotiate her salary.
Oh, yeah.
especially if she's in an environment where she's got to learn new skills, her value is now increasing exponentially.
I think so. I agree.
I think it's important that she talk to somebody that isn't her boss.
Yep.
And make sure that she's being treated fairly within her new work environment. So
I like that.
Just throwing that out there. Like
800
I'm here for
HR
you
staff.
And everybody HR else, staff. Right? Like, yeah.
I'd probably have any outside voice. Granted, all the shade you're sending me beforehand, like, you know, I had to send you, I was text messaging you videos. I did force her to talk.
Oh, way, Tommy. No
it
way.
Came across. Like,
you forced her to do the video? I never would have known.
It's just for Mike and Seth.
Neither would my wife who saw them. I'm laughing because a similar thing. My wife works in Power BI all day and popped her head in the door yesterday. She's like, I'm building my own report. I'm like, that's awesome. She's like, yeah. I'm like, want to see something funny?
Look, check out this data. Yeah. Oh, goodness. It's universal. It's everywhere. I've heard a lot of people kind of doing both things. I think I was talking with Ben Ferry, and he does Power BI Guy on YouTube channel, just kind of some candid conversations with people. His wife is also into Power BI, so he's had some great candid conversations where they're kind of going, talking together. Thankfully, or maybe not, my wife's like, you do the data. I'm going to do other things. I'm not going to do that. So there's no learning Power BI at my house, not at this point. Although my kids are enjoying it. My kids have taken a liking to trying to build scrims and background images for reports. Ah, so we're trying to work an angle there, which is excellent. All right. We want to go through a couple items. I know we have a couple more items here. The Microsoft Fabric blog, which it kind of comes out weird. The April blog came out at the end of April, like April 24th. So it's kind of like, here's what happened in April. Oh, by the way, here's the blog. So the blog is now out. The keynote for Fabric Conference Day 1, the keynote is available. Speaking of which, inside that keynote, Microsoft talks about a new feature that is coming to Fabric, which is called the Metrics Hub, or the Fabric Metrics Layer, I think is what they're calling it. Not quite sure exactly what the language is going to look like when they're done with it. But we had Carly, a Microsoft product manager from the team of Microsoft, come talk and discuss all about this new feature. She did a great demo. We did it yesterday on the YouTube channel. So go check it out. It's on the YouTube channel. Carly is talking about the new Metrics Hub and what you can do with it and why it's going to be impactful for your models. Kind of building the master mini model scenario here, which I think is actually really interesting. So very much excited to see where this is going to go. Can't wait to get my hands on the actual feature and start playing with it a bit, because I think it's really, really neat.
There might be a play on words in there somewhere, but
there's got to be.
Yeah, it's because
it's a rhyming
in my mind. Yet. Yeah.
Something. Yeah.
One other announcement. What on our favorite channel and site, PowerBI.tips, just put out a new tutorial and video on how to use the AI feature in their fantastic Tips Plus theme generator.
Boom.
Go check that out.
Check it out. You can even demo it on two pages if you go to the wireframe section and go check it out. So Seth has got a video up talking about how to actually use AI wireframing inside Power BI Reports, hopefully helping you build reports faster and easier. More fast, more reports.
More fast, more things.
More the fast.
Tommy, I'm disappointing you. You shouldn't have taught your wife Power BI Power BI in a day. What you should have taken her to. So now that you've done that, okay, now here's what I need you to do. I need you to have a follow-up session.
Okay.
Now that you've gone through the Van Arsdale demo and you've done all the things there, okay, teach your wife how to, so she has the model, have her go to Power BI Tips Theme Generator, have her walk through the experience of just building the report page, no data, but just the pages and getting the visuals on the page.
Okay.
And then have her the experience of saying, isn't that much better than going to the desktop and building everything from scratch? Isn't this a lot less clicks?
First off, the Van Ar- and by the way, I didn't know what the emphasis was on the it's not Van Arsdale. So
how do you say it?
That's how I say it, Van Arsdale.
That's how I say it.
Oh, I thought you said it differently. Like, well, they're 7 years down the drain.
No, that's the data set. They use like a Van Arsdale.
The pronunciation. I thought I was wildly off.
No, that's how I say it.
It still has the image background, which is kind of a cheat. We're like, hey, we're going to have fast track the last hour and a half. So,
well, I'm just saying. So the images are there. You have all the things you need from the Van Arsdale dashboard today. You can just rock those things in and go stylize your theme. And, you know, in the diagram, in the tutorial, they do like a lot of like, you can change the title here. You can change this thing there. You can do like, you don't need to do that anymore. You can change it on all visuals all at once, all inside the theme generator. So that, maybe we should see if we can get in on the Van Arsdale demo at the very end there. And by the way, this last half a day, you could have just erased all of that and just done it in five clicks by going to Power BI Tip Theme Generator. Anyways, we should probably, now I think, set this as a challenge now. We need to go out, get the Van Arsdale images and go put out a theme
to make the dashboard in a day that much easier. Oh my gosh, that's a great idea. That's a great idea.
Here we're gonna. We should make a scrim, a theme.
They start with that section, and somebody just goes done.
I already downloaded it from the theme generator. It's already complete. That's good. I like that. We should think about that one.
Really good. That is really good.
Okay. Anyways, in other news, there is a ton of announcements that came out from the Fabric blog. And Tommy, you're making the comment earlier, and I think this is where they're going. It seems like Microsoft is trying to combine the Power BI blog and then all the Fabric elements into one monolithic blog. So, I don't know. We've got a incredibly scrollable page right now on the Fabric blog.
Yeah, 68 pages if you made a PDF.
Oh, my gosh. Yes.
Jeez.
So of the 68 pages of really great, this is, well, one on one hand, this feels a lot like what we were doing when we first saw Power BI show up to the scene. But there's a lot of sanding of the edges and refining and making new features. This is encouraging. Like, I want to see lots of features popping out from Fabric. But anyways, that aside, what features of this blog post stood out to you guys? Anything that you want to kind of note?
So I think the big thing is there's all everything from Power BI updates are here. But to me, it's the fast copy for data flows, which will always be a fan of my data flows, especially my Gen 2. They released this feature. I think actually they announced it previous in April, but it really, really makes sense. I think it's closer pipelines in terms of the scalability of our Fabric data pipelines. I think that's kind of the biggest gripe a lot of people have with data flows. But we can actually enable per query, basically ingesting terabytes of data using data flows, ingesting it into a SQL source or into a lakehouse.
Sure.
So I'm really happy that is finally now full and available.
Look at,
yeah. I mean, comprehensively, right? Like, I think this blog to me is almost like it's a fantastic recap of the month. If it's coming out this late, it's more historical sense where people, as they're coming along, have a centralized place to understand Fabric, right? So we're pulling all, like, obviously we're tied into the Power BI one, so that one comes out earlier. We know all these Power BI features. We've talked about them because they've been released already. Mm-hmm. And I'm assuming it's the same for the others, maybe except for the whatever was the latest in releasing it, and that's why the Fabric blog wasn't put out yet, because it would be incomplete, right? You need all of these components to be done.
Yeah.
So we talked about, I think, a lot of these elements, but in the same way that, I don't know where I land on the fence, because yes, it's an exercise for your finger in scrolling as far as, you know, the length of the blog. It is nice that they consolidated all though, right? So you have your contents, there's quick links for all the areas that you're interested in. So I don't know what I like.
Did you guys catch the Fabric metadata scanning app? So this is a little interesting. It's only two paragraphs. But it's a open source project for building on all the admin REST APIs that are now available for Fabric, utilizing the scanner API, and I think it pulls in all the other entities. And basically, this application in GitHub, it handles all the steps for calling the scanner API, authentication, the throttling, incremental because of multiple over 100 workspaces, and it's available just to use with a service principal. And this is something relatively new when it comes to all the artifacts in Fabric. So it's only a little paragraph, but it's kind of pretty cool.
Yeah, it's out, but it's just a GitHub repo. I mean, it's not really anything special,
but
it's nothing special. And it's all in C#. So it's in a language that you probably can't use. Nope. And it's like a full, you know, you have to have VS Visual Studio project. So just to say this, like, there's going to be solutions out there. And we've built a solution around all these APIs already. We have a monitoring solution that does a lot of this, but I think you're going to see a lot more companies clamoring to try and get access to their analytics and their data from Microsoft. But I haven't seen a very off the shelf solution yet for this. This is the closest one that I've seen, but I don't think it's okay. I would say just, you know, interesting idea, but this is for IT shops. It's not for the business user at this point. One thing I'll point out, a couple things that I liked was all the stuff around Spark. I'm a big fan of Spark. There's a lot of improvements that have been coming from Spark, and the community has been really vocal about this new feature called Optimistic Job Admission for Fabric Spark, which allows more notebooks to run simultaneously and starts queuing up. It sounds like they're saying they're queuing up more jobs into your pools. And so that way you can run more notebooks simultaneously. And it's not reserving as many cores for your job running. So that is very exciting to see that one. It's a great option in the Spark settings, which is one. This is one of these things where Microsoft, I felt like, has been behind in the marketplace on Spark, and they're starting to catch up. They also announced the percent run feature inside notebooks. So now you can run a notebook and then call another notebook to run inside the previous notebook, which is, again, very common in a lot of other data engineering spaces, which, again, we're catching up, I feel like. And then the final option that's coming out for Fabric, or for Spark, is the, let's see, where was it? Oh, there's one more here that I had. They had another one for, I don't remember where it was now. I put my finger on the percent run. Oh, Git integration now is included with your job definition. And I've been using Synapse and VS Code quite a lot with notebooks, which is actually kind of neat. You can go right into Spark and you can just drop the code right into VS Code. And now you have all your VS Code fanciness that you like, your customizations that are there, and you can write your notebooks directly inside VS Code, which is kind of really cool. So I really like that integration. It's getting smoother, easier to use. We're closing a lot of gaps here quickly, people. It's getting really interesting.
To be hardcore dev.
Yeah, I don't know how much you've used the Synapse VS Code extension, which allows you to like run and utilize the Jupyter.
That's what I'm talking about. I think that's what they're talking about there.
It's now at a container, which makes more sense because it's kind of a pain to do all your work on desktop because if I couldn't open a notebook.
What? Wait, I need to hear that again. Say that again. You just said. It's a pain to
use notebooks in VS Code. For Fabric, because
you were saying something about desktop
for VS Code desktop. Yes. Because
okay.
I get 18 prompts from the extension to set a local folder. And if I want to open one notebook, I have to open a new window and I lose my workspace and
yep.
I lose that. So they're making basically for those who have some clue what we're talking about, rather than making it the extension, they're making the Synapse VS Code a container, like something like a Docker, an image. So It probably all runs in a nice little place, which makes a lot of sense. So we don't have to worry about losing previous history in a VS Code workspace. So
excellent. Lots of good things there. Anyways, the blog is filled with good stuff. So definitely hit it up. Go look at the blog. Go check out the features that you like. I'll see if I can snag a link here for the most recent update. That way everyone can kind of see all the notes, updates, and details. This is exciting. I'm very pleased to see how much stuff is coming out the door so fast. So the link's in the chat window as well, if you want to go check out the most recent April update. Anything else? Should we just jump into our main topic now? It's been like 15 minutes.
A while. Maybe we should.
We should probably jump in. All right. So let's jump into our main topic today. Main topic for today is going to be around, what kind of deployment methods can we use inside Fabric? Microsoft has a blog post around this. So there's actually a link in the description of the video. I'll also put the link here inside the chat window as well, just in case you want to follow along with what's inside the description. So here's the article for today. It's now currently in the chat window. I'm talking about different, from the Learn documentation, different deployment patterns. And so they start talking about different levels in Fabric deployments, how a deployment patterns can kind of align, what are your business requirements. And then they start actually outlining pattern one, pattern two, talking about multiple workspaces backed by a single Fabric capacity. And then pattern three, multiple workspaces backed by separate capacities, which is kind of, we've talked about this a little bit on the online, and I'll be honest, whoever's doing the graphics for this feels a lot like Kurt. This feels like a Kurt graphical element. It feels like a Figma and what he's kind of been drawing out there. And
I see him in contributors.
You don't though. You only see the most recent contributor, I think.
Mm. No, so the contributors at the bottom.
Do they have it fixed now?
They're just listed multiple.
Oh, maybe he's not on that one. Okay. Interesting. And I think there's going to be, I think these are three patterns that Microsoft is observing. I've definitely been talking about these for a while now. It's nice that Microsoft is actually coming out with some documentation supporting the different patterns we're talking about here. So I think that's very helpful. Let's just jump in. What do you guys think? What do you, any of these patterns resonate with you? What makes sense to you?
So I'm just actually going to start, maybe not too much off wall, but did you find it interesting at all that this was in the Azure architecture documentation, not even in Fabric documentation?
I didn't even catch that, honestly.
And I wonder if there was a choice there. I don't think that was an accident submission, but what that actually means, I'm not sure to say, but I think this is really, to me, where Power BI really kind of stood alone for the business users. We're really seeing, if you touch Fabric, you're really playing into kind of all hands of the business from an infrastructure point of view. Mm-hmm. I think that it's just really making that point there where it is so easy to create a lakehouse and get started with Microsoft Fabric. But that being said, your hands can reach a little farther now, so to speak, and can touch a few more things or can affect a few more things around the kitchen in so many words. And I think this was definitely a intended approach to actually have this in the Azure architecture. But no, I think really just starting off for me, it's high level. You know, this is not one of the Microsoft documentation that has 18 other pages. It's much shorter than the blog. But I think it's doing the high level point of view in terms of how would you really go about Fabric from an IT and if you already have had Synapse, if you've already been working in one of these systems already, how is your transition going to go? And I think that's where, to me, the biggest thing that stood out was the high levelness of this and really who the audience for and like where do you start with Fabric?
Yeah. I mean, general comments. I agree with that. Just from the standpoint that I do, I think they do a really good job of like laying out a couple patterns, and then each of those patterns have the things that are helpful, right? Like if you are a monolithic user, right? When you provision a single Fabric capacity and attach a single workspace to it, the following points are true, right? Like bullet, yep. bullet. And then you might choose to implement this pattern if you have one of these following reasons. Like that type of guide for people helps them lock into the relevant points that they need to care about, right? At least on a high level. You still need to do your due diligence after this. Think about the architectures. Where do you need to go,
yep.
et cetera. And I also think they do a really good job of the considerations, right? So even when you're like, is this for me? This resonates because all of these things are true about my environment or my company or, you know, what we're trying to do, then it's okay, but are you sure part where it's like they add the tables of considerations that might influence your decision to adopt this deployment pattern. So it's like the aspect and the considerations, right? So even for example, for the audience, right, where if we talk about the, you know, monolithic, right?
Let's just I like where you're going with this, right?
You know, it starts off with this deployment pattern. You're provisioning a single workspace to cater to all of your use cases, and then it's single capacity, obviously.
Correct.
So everything is in the same place. So it goes through those different points I was talking about, but even like goes down to the third part where you're talking about considerations, and it's like lower governance mandates and restrictions on the platform are required. It suits smaller organizations that prefer faster time to market. Challenges might develop if governance requirements evolve to become more complex.
Yes.
Right. So those bits of information where it's like, oh, wait, there's a check here. There's a balance of like, if I choose this, what are the pluses and minuses of that? So I love this type of documentation because it gets people to lock into the particular area, but then reevaluate, like double check, think about the other aspects that they might not be thinking about instead of just barreling forward into, yep, that's me, let's go, and not think about like the next steps of where they need to be or potential challenges with choosing one one of these patterns or another.
Yeah, I like what you're going with that, Seth. One thing I'll say I find interesting across the entire article, you'll see every time they draw these documents, there's a little image that they supply, and they talk about the fabric tenant, and then there's the fabric capacity. So they have like they're basically thinking about like an entire Power BI tenant or fabric tenant. It's like the same thing, right? It's what they're kind of communicating. Inside that context, they're drawing, you know, the semantic model, the rapport, the pipeline. Yeah, makes sense. They also have the lake house. Great. No big deal there. But every single drawing, they're drawing the one lake outside of the fabric environment, which I find interesting because my understanding is one lake is a concept. One lake is not, you don't go buy a one lake. It's just part of what fabric is. So I find it very interesting that they're attaching this concept of a one lake, but they're actually drawing it outside of the fabric capacity. But one lake is more or less just a concept. It's not necessarily like the one lake is a collection of lake houses. That's the intent there. So it's this API layer that it just kind of manages all the data for you. It keeps the storage for you, easy to use and consistent. But there is no item that is the one lake. And you'll see that in all three diagrams that they've supplied, that the one lake is independent of the Fabric workspace, which I found kind of interesting.
They've been doing that since they introduced Microsoft Fabric. If you look at the slides from Build last year, one lake was always at the bottom, but not necessarily connected. So that's still completely in sync. So I just looked at them and I'm like, that sounds oddly familiar, what you're saying.
Yeah, it's been this like, you know, I agree, like every organization gets the idea of a one lake, but I don't think you get access to the one lake features unless you are paying for a fabric capacity where you're now standing up one lake. So it's kind of this interesting dichotomy of, yes, we're talking about one lake. Yes, your data lives in all places, but you don't. One of the things that I don't think they call out very clearly here is the boundaries and responsibilities between the different workspaces and how that is important across the different security boundaries. I think there should be more emphasis. They talk about some of this about the security control plane. I think that's very relevant when we're starting to talk about breaking things apart into different workspaces. And I see the monolithic deployment. I almost never see that anymore. That is a very early stage of when people get involved with Power BI. And very quickly, I think most organizations outgrow that for governance, security, and thinking through breaking apart the responsibility as the Power BI surface area grows.
So let's talk about that. Like the monolithic, easy setup, easy capacity, easy management.
Sure.
You're suggesting you think that most organizations move quickly past that?
Yeah, I'm thinking like the monolithic is only for, and so I'm thinking organizationally, most organizations don't just have one workspace. There's usually multiple.
To be fair, and the reason I'm pressing into this is more often than not, you're working with larger companies.
I would agree. I mean, I run a small business, and even me as a small business, I have... For even, you know, I only have,
well,
I know how it works.
Snowflake too.
I know, but you know, there's always a use case of here's some data that I need some people to see. Here's some other data that everyone needs to see. Yeah. So there's always some kind of dichotomy that's happening there. There's always a minimum of a couple areas when you think about that. So,
because this is suggesting one workspace.
Correct.
Right. Single workspace for all the stuff, for all the people, for all the things.
Yes.
And I would, you got to be really small.
Really small to do this one.
Everybody to play in the same playground.
Now, what I will kind of lean on here is like, okay, as an organization, this probably doesn't occur as much. But if we talk about departments and teams of people, okay, I could be more swayed towards, okay, there's a team of people in a department or this. This is like, hey, look, you are going to go do your own thing. You need to have access to Fabric or whatever. Go team, figure out your stuff. Like, and I think from my perspective, that happens in much smaller teams, like 3 to 5 people. That's what I'm saying. In my experience, that's where the monolithic deployment makes sense. And you're not expecting to go get data from other parts of the organization. They're just kind of acting like in a vacuum. That's their space.
Well, or doesn't this also apply to places that have a person or multiple people that surface up reporting in the organization? Completely central, right? Sure. Like nobody, yep. nobody else, you don't have self-service going on. You just have consumers of information. And I would see that you could scale into like larger, smaller businesses where like, yeah, they have a team and that's where everybody, all the reporting stuff happens there.
Yeah,
I could see that. I could see that going for, you know, quite like up to a certain level of, you know, size of a company without needing to scale. Right. Because it's where you start to branch out where other parts of the organization would want to get engaged in these activities because they have like the initiatives gets larger, the objectives get larger, it requires more people, et cetera. Like you're scaling as an organization and it requires that separation as opposed to like I've worked for shops where, you know, I'm the guy or I'm part of a team that develops like consolidates all the information from the organization. Everybody's under, you know, secure NDAs and, you know, you're dealing with sensitive information in some cases, but all the reporting generates from that team. Like I see this as a valid approach that could actually extend a while. It where you're going to run into problems, like it calls out, is like, how do you unwind from that? Or how do you break apart or adjust as the business scales if that's on the roadmap?
And this is where I would say like it's okay to start like this, but fully know like to me that monolithic deployment probably happens in a place where we don't have a center of excellence. There's maybe one person kind of managing all the things, the tenant admin, the workspace, deploying all the reports.
Your center of excellence is based on the excellence of the person.
Of the person, right? Good? The one person. Yes, yes. But what I find is that one person, essentially what happens is if you work with that leader of that Power BI space and your leadership in your organization, you can quickly take that person and that person very fast. I mean, I've seen this happen to a number of careers of people that we've worked with. They move from, I'm doing this very small thing where I manage everything. Leadership gets a hold of it and say, look, we're winning with this. How do we scale this out further? So I'm saying you can start here, but I think there is real conversations you need to have as your organization to say, okay, where do we go from here if we're going to start this route? So I think that was a very appropriate call out set that you made was there may be some friction as you go from one workspace. How do you carve out who owns what data, who owns what data sets? And I'll argue a monolithic deployment is going to get a lot easier now that we have multiple apps coming from a single workspace. One of the early reasons why we wanted to have many workspaces because I couldn't have more than one app linked to one workspace.
Yeah.
So I think I just saw a note here from the Microsoft team on the ideas page. I think they're trying to early July preview the idea of multiple apps, one workspace. Well, if you're consuming data, this makes total sense, right? You could definitely do a distribution of content, people consuming data at a larger scale by having 6, 7, 8 apps from that single workspace.
Yeah.
And now also add that we have the ability to use folders now. So I can mentally, I can organize it a lot better. So like, those especially, are two huge features that I think makes this a lot easier to use.
Well, how easy does that make it for the central team?
Way better.
Right.
Way better.
Everything that comes out from my team can be managed from one workspace to the different parts of the organization through apps.
Correct.
Like that's the central like area of how do I deploy reporting throughout the organization for my things, as opposed to right now, right? The struggle of, okay, does that belong in the business workspace? Because that's their report. Okay. I can share it with them. Now, do my people know all the workspaces that they have to go to find those reports to redeploy them? I'm looking forward to like just for my own sanity, but I'm also a control freak. So like getting like moving all this stuff into that central place where I have a place to deploy things.
And I want to point out one thing that you said there real quick. Sorry, Tommy. I didn't mean to interrupt. I apologize. I think, Seth, you made a really good point there. There comes a point in time where I'm in the monolithic deployment. If you're distributing things through apps, I think it's a safer method than giving people like member or view access inside the workspace, because there's always this risk. And my heart palpitations kind of come in light of this, right? If there's a model in there or a model and model and report all in one, right? If someone comes in and adjusts that model somehow, some way, we potentially get ourselves into some problems, because if that model changes and people are relying on that data downstream, you could be breaking a lot of things very quickly. And so there, in this monolithic deployment, it's very hard to test things and figure out if you're adjusting the model, if you're changing things, how do you preview a test of that before it gets out to the real world? And that's one of the reasons why I'm like, I'm probably never starting organizations on the monolithic deployment anymore.
I mean, you one can make the argument because with the folders, because folders really are going to be such an incredible game changer. But yeah, I can't say even if just for a Power BI deployment, starting and ending all in one workspace, regardless if there's multiple apps or there's folders. One of the kind of the big tenets, which I'm surprised, especially with the introduction of the article, they start with the monolithic approach. Maybe they are seeing that. But to me, they're kind of the technology or their technology is going in kind of the opposite direction, where there's a big focus in the introductory on domains. Right. So really the maybe that single workspace, you're right, is the center of excellence is me.
Yep.
And that's it.
I think so. Yep.
Fine. But I think they're seem to be going in the other direction when it comes to the use case in really utilizing domains as part of the strategy.
Yeah, I would say domains really don't get fully used until their third kind of pattern. You might maybe use them in the second, but
no, yeah, I'm not saying part of the from the alignment and the levels of deployment. They're saying it's tenet, then we're going to utilize domains. Sure. Yeah, and I think they want to push people there. To me, I'm looking at domains, and not to go too off topic, but I'm looking at how Microsoft is building domains and their intention. And I think it's a lot more than just a nice to have. We've done an episode, I think, on it, but I'm just seeing more in the documentation, and not just this one, but other Fabric documentation on the governance and the security on utilizing.
Okay.
Yes.
This is, I think it's a really good point. You make that point, Tommy, and I agree with you. Domains allows you to delegate some administrative privileges to the domain owner. Like, that's really important. So I think actually your point there, Tommy, is very timely, because I think this moves us right away into pattern number two, which is now multiple workspaces potentially backed by a single Fabric capacity. So this is now talking about workspace A and workspace B. And this is what I think I typically start with when I talk to organizations around building things. And I think very quickly we should be having this conversation. If we're talking about monolithic, you should immediately compare two workspaces side by side. Because what I'm thinking is, this is the example of, I'm going to build a model, a semantic model, and a thin report. And I think, honestly, if your team is larger than one person, the model and thin report pattern is a very solid pattern to use, especially now that you can actually create reports in the workspace, and we can have models having lots of other things like an exploration hanging off of that. If you watch our demo on Monday with Carly starts talking about other things you can start hanging off of these models as well, like the metric sets. These are other elements that we're going to be able to produce from the model. So I think right away, I'm already in my mind, I'm thinking, okay, because the model is so important and it's so valuable to what we're going to be building, either central BI or self-service BI, I really think you need to separate the models into its one workspace, and then you link the associated reports in a separate workspace, just from a pure controls and governance standpoint. Because I don't necessarily want all my users who are in the workspace building reports, I'm not expecting all of them to be expert modelers. And so I don't like that pattern that much. Go ahead.
So 2 points, just for clarity for everybody, right? We're like, pattern two is you use separate workspaces, but a single capacity,
right?
And it's interesting that they call out right away, because a single capacity is shared across workspaces. Workloads that run concurrently at any time might affect the performance of jobs and interactive queries. Like, that's right under
number
the
one,
description
number one sentence
of
yes.
pattern two, right? So be aware. But to your point, Mike, it like you're saying, when you talk to people, you're recommending pattern two right out of the gate because it's scalable. You're scaling already.
Correct.
Yes, there is the caution that you're going to use the same capacity. So cost remains the same.
Yep.
However, you're separating things out by workspace. So correct. you're gonna do what? You're gonna add a little bit of overhead in correct. Terms of administration. Mm-hmm. What other gotchas are there, or things that people need to consider, you know, going from pattern one to pattern two that are unique to, you know, unique challenges or things that they would need to be aware of?
Yeah, I think pattern number two, when you have two workspaces, I think actually sends a message more to I'm preparing for self-service. I think every conversation I walk into is someone saying, how do we do self-service in Power BI? Well, I mean, we've talked about this a lot on the podcast extensively. Central BI has consistent workloads. I'm going to load this data. I'm going to get the information in, and it's going to be consistent. And then there's reports that come out and people consume them. And that's kind of how we build. Well, the on-demand or the self-service side of things is much more variable. I feel like the demand of those self-service reports can be much higher. The demand usage on when those self-service reports are being hit or run or executed, they can absorb a lot more capacity without as much planning around that. So something weird happens, the end of the month is occurring, those self-service reports are people in Excel going to Power BI and trying to rip out a whole bunch of data. Not necessarily the best way to do that all the time, but it's going to happen. So I think in this pattern here, while you're not really managing that usage at this point, you are planning a lot more for, I'm going to have models that we're willing to use to build a app or, you know, workspace B where we have all the reports. So I'm now really thinking about, there's a user in my team who's probably really good at modeling, and I have maybe two or three users that are really good at building reports. So someone focuses on the model, owning the speed and the performance of the model, and other users are focusing on executing the report side. And now I have people that can work simultaneously. I can be building changes to the model at the same time as building changes to the report page. I can't tell you how many times I've gotten into trouble when the report and the semantic model is the same file.
Yeah.
You run into conflicts all the time. Someone will do some work. You can only have one person doing an edit to a page because they also have control of the whole model. So I think from a scalability standpoint, I focus on that as well.
I like your point, and I think I would extend it, right? So
okay.
You said preparing for self-service.
Yes.
I think this pattern is the safer approach because you're preparing for changes in the business. Right, a little bit broader scope of thing, because it accounts for usage patterns, right? Potentially with self-service, right? Mm-hmm. Usage patterns are changing. Yep. It accounts for growth, right? Because all of a sudden, hey, we may have a central team right now, but all of a sudden, all it takes is, you know, go getter in finance to separate out their, you know, work streams and have data people,
not wrong,
right? Yeah. And then all of a sudden, now you have a separation that actually might require pattern three, right?
Yep.
But ultimately, like, you're sustaining it all until hijinks happen.
Yep.
But also one of the things that may lead into pattern three, and I don't want to like go too far, Tommy, if you want to talk about pattern two a little bit, is potential like growth in geography.
Yes, that's a good point. Yeah, I like that one too. It's a really good point.
No, I think makes natural move or. Pattern two is Power BI Premium, what we've been doing already. So yeah, I think it would be good to go to pattern three.
So the only thing I will note, again, I like your point here, Seth. If we're using Workspace A and Workspace B, I mean, one thing that's missing from this article that I'm looking at, these are deployment patterns on how people are deploying. Mm-hmm. I'm looking at this and going, every deployment pattern I see here feels like we're only building a prod type environment of what this looks like. So one other area here that I'm in my mind, I'm rolling in my head and thinking through is how do I build a report and how do I build a semantic model where I can have things break, but not interrupt the service to my executives, to my reports, to everything else that's happening. And I think a lot of organizations, again, as we start thinking, we're now moving away from, let me say it this way. In pattern one, users using systems to get data, everything's prod. There is no, I don't have two CRM systems. It's like I'm buying Salesforce. All of our data lives there. We're not building a dev test prod version of Salesforce. We have one version of it. We're going to consume data from there. So in my thinking, we're also aligning a little bit of what the workspace does according to what our organization has purchased. So if you do a lot of things in your organization that only runs in prod, which I see a lot of people doing, we only develop and prod. So it happens. But that pattern works better in the monolithic and pattern two. When you start talking about multiple environments, dev, test, and prod, and you have multiple servers to connect to, those initial pattern one and pattern two, I think, start falling apart a little bit. They're a little harder to manage. It gets more difficult to figure out what you're using.
Well, and the consideration that's even like larger there is you're using a capacity to manage like the workloads of test environments and your production environment.
Yeah. So that's where I want to go with that.
If you are doing heavy something in those test environments, you know, you're affecting your prod environment, or you could affect your prod environment.
Exactly
and
right.
That may not be acceptable at all.
Yes.
So.
All right. So I think with that transition, that makes a lot of sense to move over to the third section, which is talking about pattern three. No, and before I go into pattern three, there is a great, in this article, there's really nice tables that are listed throughout every section of this, the pattern one, pattern two, pattern three. In those tables, it has every single area you should be thinking about: governance, security, security control, administration, DevOps, administrators, usability for other roles, performance. Like there's a nice consistent section. These are key aspects that you need to think about when you're picking these different patterns. I thought that was really good. And the fact that those tables are consistent across every single area is relevant. It potentially would be nice if they gave me a matrix at the end that let me see all three of them together with,
I get what you're saying.
Yeah. But I love the idea of like, there's three tables that are doing it. I just feel like at the end, there should have been like a matrix of, okay, here's a summary of the comparison across the three different models. Yeah. It might've been very wordy and very long, but at least it would have been like a table that you could expand and see all the details from it. So maybe a combined version of those three tables at the end would have been helpful too. Sorry. Anyways, pattern three, we're now talking about three workspaces. And this feels a lot more like dev, test, prod in my world. Like,
well, you're talking about many workspaces.
Many workspaces. So there could be capacity A handles workspace A and B, and then you have a separate capacity, call it capacity B, which is handling another workspace, a third workspace potentially. So to me, this feels what you were talking about just a second ago, Seth. This is, I'm going to make sure prod stays on and running. And we're going to have, you know, workspace C is our production environment, and then A and B are our dev and test environments, so we can get people confirming things are working. We're able to deploy the right things. In workspace A, my developers are attached to it. In workspace B, there's no developers. There's only individuals looking at checking the data quality and looking at apps that are coming out of workspace B. That's the QA environment. And then workspace C is really production. We're putting things live in production, and that's where that lives.
How do you, I agree with you, right? Like in a perfect world, we have dev, test, prod, mm-hmm. or at least test, prod.
Sure. Or dev, prod.
But in those, prod, in, prod. Those in those scenarios, right? There are you're basically replicating processes, data, reporting.
Yep.
That's costly. Right, like you're basically saying, if I have an F64, I need another F64 for that test environment in order to get all of the features that are part of my prod solution, aren't you?
Ooh, you make a great point here, Seth. So, if we're talking fabric, I think the answer is yes. If you're sticking, so this is where again we're focused on fabric because that's what the article's about.
Mm-hmm.
But if we're not talking fabric, there are some other
fabric.
There are some other pattern. I mean, if you're just a Power BI shop at this point, like there are other patterns that they're not talking about here, which you can use the same pattern where you have premium per user for your workspace A and B, and then you can switch over to fabric at the workspace C level. So the final workspace can be something. So you can actually switch and mix and match some of the premium SKUs depending on what features you're using there. But you're right, Seth. I don't know. It depends on what security features you're trying to look for, right? If you need managed virtual networks, that is an F64 only feature that exists in that fabric workspace C. If you're looking for free users to consume content from your QA environment or testing, that's an F64 gated feature. You can only get those free users to consume content at that F64 level. So you are 100% right. If you're in this example here, if you're using an F64 in production, and there are certain features you need to come upstream in capacity A, where you're splitting that off, yes, you're you're doubling your cost in this one. Yeah. However, I would argue in certain situations, you don't need to have all that. And if you're not using all the specifically F64 features, you can get away with a smaller capacity in your workspace A and B.
Yeah.
And now you can start optimizing. To me, this gives me more ability to optimize costs a bit more and juggle between, okay, it's an F8 and now it's an F32 in production. So that still gives you options there.
I asked that question specifically to drive home the point of what is so significantly different between pattern 2 and 3. Mm-hmm. And that is you pattern 3 forces architecture, right? You really have to think about the environment that you're creating. And maybe, Tommy, this is why it's in the Azure section, right? Because what we're talking about is, okay, what are our patterns? What are the things we need to support? And there's ultimate flexibility in this pattern, right? I can create multiple different workspaces. They can be owned and managed by other teams. I can create multiple different workspaces, and I can separate out separate different types of capacity for the different needs of a workload, right? In my ETL process or in my data infrastructure, et cetera, sky's the limit kind of thing. But there are costs with those decisions or patterns that you would want to follow specifically to tie back to the business need, right? And I alluded to it in pattern 2. So some of the ones that we would in the prod area talk about a lot is, hey, we have these fabric capacities. The main workloads are, you know, through these workspaces. However, a lot, like, we have reporting that's done in this geographic area and, you know, way out here in a different part of, you know, I'm a US based, so Europe, right? And we want that reporting or versions of those reports to operate as, mm-hmm. you know, at peak efficiency as well. We also need a separate capacity in that geographic region, right?
Correct.
There's a business need.
Yes.
Performance of these reports in a particular geographic realm, right? Mm-hmm. Like, could there be a business need for, you know, separating out by departments and they run their own capacities? Sure. There could be a business need to say, we don't like throwing things into prod. We want a test environment.
Yep.
I have different workspaces and domains for that sort of thing. So, like, this is where those patterns and practices, I think, really get engaged and require the thought and thinking through, yes. how do you set these things up? So it is a lot more work to stand up the environment or set it up correctly. But to your point, like, I think pattern 2 and 3 work pretty seamlessly together from the standpoint, yes. that a great starting point is pattern 2.
Yes.
And you can evolve that pretty quickly into 3. But don't just move into 3 without that proper planning.
And that's a really amazing point that I was going to make there, Seth. I think you hit the nail on the head on that one. You need, by the time you get to pattern 3, if you are thinking about doing pattern 3 or you're getting to that level, you need, I would say it's a very hard requirement in my mind, to have a center of excellence, to have governing documents on how you're going to use it, have someone architecting the plan of this. And that a bare minimum needs, you need to have a community of practice, at least a page that's describing, here's our architecture, here's our decisions, here's how we're deploying this stuff. This is why we're doing this way. Because I really think with Fabric, we are in an untapped world of amazing capability. And let me refine my comment there so I can give you some more context to this. I really do think with the ability to have lakehouses and shortcuts, or lakehouses and data flows or data pipelines that are pushing data into other environments, I'm really firmly believing that there could be a central workspace that can do a lot of the central data engineering from the central BI team. And when we need to distribute content out to various departments within our organization, we have the capability to provide a handful of shortcuts. So let's talk about product master, DIM product master. There's probably going to be many departments that need access to that information, but you don't want them to own or touch that centralized data. You want to give them, you know, an access to that area. So to me, there's no reason. You could have a central hub, a capacity that is doing the data engineering in Fabric, and you can have a lot of spokes either at the business unit level, at the department level, at a single team level, depending on their capabilities, and you can provide them direct shortcuts to your lakehouse data through OneLake. And now everyone's talking about the same table the same way. And now you have really clear ownership of, this team owns Product Master. That table comes from them. And so if I think about this, there's a really rich story here that could be, you know, shortcuts for dimensions. Yeah, Donald, you're saying it right here. Shortcuts for dimensions is going to be a thing. I think we can do this. And we can actually now have proper ownership of certain teams. So what if your product dimension table has to come from some people who do a bunch of Excel work on it? Great. My requirement to you is you're going to make a Delta Lake table that has all the product dimensions in a table. You're going to own it, and you're going to provide the rest of the organization shortcuts to your information. Now we have a very clear, this is your workspace. These are the dimensions you own. These are responsible for you. And if they're wrong, we know who to go back to. There's an owner for the workspace. So I really think this is a very strong pattern here, and we can really enhance the self-service capability by not requiring that IT, the central IT department, is continually getting beat up with them paying for a large capacity. We can delegate this. This allows us to delegate costs into other parts of the organization, and so that they stop whining about, well, you don't ever give me the data, I can't have access to. Great. Here's a whole table. Go get yourself wrapped around the axle, and here's your own capacity. You're going to pay for it. If you do bad design, that's on you. So
how important is this to you? Because there's a cost to everything that you're asking for.
And that's right. Really, really valuable. If it's free, everyone's going to use all of it.
As opposed to, and well, that spools up an interesting cost conversation where it belongs in the organization, but at least it brings it forward, right?
Yes.
Like rather than costs of an analytics or BI team being questioned, like, where's the value?
Yeah. Right? Yes.
Like, well, the value is finance needs this.
Yeah.
Well, that's not proving anything. Well, in this way, it's like, well, we're providing the core data for finance, and finance goes, yeah, obviously we need to pay for this because it's our, like, without it, we don't have any data.
Exactly right.
One of the things I liked actually in the strategy point of view too, and I think we're probably getting there as well, is that you may have workloads in different departments or different regions that have an actual SLA or a performance tied to it in terms of how much you're actually spending trying to do this.
Correct.
So actually having those other capacities organized.
Available.
Available in this way actually can say, obviously I don't know how much you're actually moving things around, but to your point, Mike,
there's more options. Like
with shortcuts and just how much, you know, like there, how many approaches we can do with that. I mean, this is slightly similar to our Power BI premium that we'd used to do with multiple premiums. But one thing I think I would have liked to see in the diagrams is the types of artifacts, but that's probably more for our technical documentation.
Yeah, I think you're right, Tommy, because there could have been a lot more other things that are happening in these workspaces. And they literally simplified it to like report, model, pipeline, lake. I get it. I think it's more conceptual at this point, but you're right. I mean, there's a lot more that can be going on here. So I know we're kind of at time, and maybe we should do final thoughts and kind of wrap here. So, Tommy, any kind of final thoughts that you're thinking through this article as you, you know, think through and basically kind of unpack these different patterns?
I think the biggest thing is it makes more and more sense, right, that there are retiring Power BI premium SKUs, because this is the same.
Particularly the P SKU.
The P SKUs,
because
honestly, both with deployment 2 and 3, these are the same things that I held with Power BI Premium at organizations, but it was just semantic models that we are focusing on. Now, if we're going to be focusing, integrating, and relying on lakehouses, both from the business point of view, you and your Excel sheets, and just we'll pass it through, but everything else too, I think this just makes a lot more sense. And I think, too, hopefully having the track on what those artifacts are in those workspaces, I think that's the next documentation. Maybe rewrite that in terms of if you're going to have a multiple workspace solution or multiple capacity solution, how would you want to organize that? How would you want to actually locate things? But no, I mean, this is right down the wheelhouse. So thanks, Azure.
Yes, exactly. And I will say, a lot of Fabric things feel like Azure in general. So this feels like we're getting a lot of Azure things pulled into Power BI, which is kind of cool. Seth, any final thoughts for you?
Yeah, I couldn't. Oh, man. F64 from P. I think I couldn't disagree more with Tommy, but maybe that's a whole nother episode. I would say I agree with Mike. I like the pattern too, right? Because it starts at least with the ability to scale that hub and spoke model. I have a central team. I'm going to grow. I don't know how to change, but like it doesn't take much to spool that up. Single capacity, get your head around things, and then you can scale from there. Mm-hmm. If you scale, just make sure it's intentional. Make sure that you tie out those things to the specific additional costs or teams, whatever. So I love the documentation. I love the article because I think it elicits this type of conversation within an organization. Mm-hmm. And it was a worthwhile read for sure.
My final thoughts here are kind of around the more you move up in complexity in your architectures, the more you're going to need thought and thought leaders and thinking through what is the balance between value and cost. So everything, I'm going through this whole thing and saying, okay, there are, as I'm moving up in complexity, as I'm adding more elements in my environment, I'm really trying to balance, okay, how much do I want to pay and what's the value that produces for me, right? If it's okay if a report breaks for my CEO because we're playing with one environment, sometimes that happens and they're like, oh, it's fine. Let's just fix it and get back to me the answers. Like that could be okay in your organization. That could be a culture that's there. There's a balance there, right? You're then centralizing more things into one monolithic workspace. If that's not okay, and people are going to get, heads are going to roll, and we have, you know, big decisions being made on numbers that we need to have available, we're probably going to be willing to spend more to get the value and security of making sure things are running properly when we roll to production. So, you know, if you have customers consuming your content from Power BI through an embedded application, like 100%, you're not going to just go roll everything into prod. You're going to have things to test out. So like there's a value proposition. That's the value of having things correct and right and always running is much, the cost of not doing that correctly is very expensive to your business. So to me, it's just a lot of balancing these costs and value opportunities. So, love the article, thought it was really good. I personally got a lot of value from the big tables that were talking about the different aspects of governance, security, DevOps, those patterns. I think that's very relevant. I would like to see more of this. Maybe I'll have to add some more. I mean, I already have some of this in my administration and governance class already. So training.tips has a lot of this information in there about deployment patterns. I'm in my mind thinking there's probably a lot more patterns that are evolving now with Fabric. What is that going to look like? What are other patterns we can utilize to build this out bigger? So stay tuned. There's probably more to come on that as well. Awesome. Thank you everyone for participating. We love your ears being attuned to us for an hour, a little over an hour now. So thank you so much. We appreciate your listenership. Our only ask to you is if you like this content, if you found this engaging, please share this article from Microsoft, as well as go share the podcast with somebody else, either on social media, someone at work, talk about it. We want more conversation around what is happening in your Power BI environments. These are things that are very relevant, I think, on top of mind for a lot of people. Tommy, where else can you find the podcast?
As always, you can find us on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts. Make sure to subscribe and leave a rating. It helps us out a ton. Do you have a question, an idea, or a topic that you want us to talk about in a future episode? Head over to powerbi.tips/podcast. Leave your name and a great question.
Awesome.
Join us live every Tuesday and Thursday, 7:30 a.m. Central, and join the conversation on all of Power BI Tips' social media channels.
Excellent. And we'll see you all next time.